Good afternoon, everyone. This is Vice Chair Hassan. Chair Richardson is presenting a bill in another committee, so I'll be chairing this committee today. In pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this remote hearing of Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson. Chair Richardson is excused. Vice Chair Hassan.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Erickson present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Bowe. Representative Bowe. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Edelson. Representative Edelson. Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Frazier.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Keeler.
Present.
Representative Moeller.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller, present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Scott.
Present.
Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Present.
Madam Vice Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. Rep. Feist, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from February 9th?
Yes, I have, Madam Chair, and I move those minutes.
All right, well, please unmute yourself for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes from February 9th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The minutes are approved. Rep. Feist, would you like to move House File 2750 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move that 2750 be sent to Education Finance.
I also believe that you have a A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape you would like.
Yes, I do.
All right. Would you explain your amendment?
Yes, it just deletes an obsolete start date.
Fantastic. Well, all in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say nay. All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
You didn't move the amendment. You just had to explain it, but it was never moved.
Oh, my bad. All right. Well, Rep. Feist, would you like to move the amendment, A1 amendment, to get the bill in the shape that you would like?
Yes, Madam Chair. So moved.
All right. Well, the amendment, the A1 amendment is before us. And as explained by Rep. Feist, it puts the bill in the shape that the author wishes. All in favor of the amendment, A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right. Well, the amendment is adopted. Rep. Feist, would you like to explain your bill as amended?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
In this committee, we spend a lot of time discussing what we think is best for students. This bill is one where the students have told us what they need, and we should listen. Amina, a student at Columbia Heights High School, told me the story of going to the school nurse for a tampon and her name being added to a long list of students who owed 25 cents per period product to the school. And Elif, a student at Hopkins High School, came to me proposing this legislation because she saw firsthand how pervasive period poverty was and wanted to do something about it. Period poverty is a widespread issue that directly impacts students' ability to get a full education. One out of every 10 menstruating youth misses school during their menstrual cycle due to a lack of access to menstrual products and resources. In a national survey of 1,000 menstruating teens, one in five struggled to afford period products, and four in five either missed or knew someone who had missed class time because they did not have access to period products. This absenteeism impacts educational attainment directly and indirectly through its correlation with increased depression and anxiety. This bill requires that schools provide period products in bathrooms for students grades 4 through 12 and is funded through an increase of $2 per pupil in the operating capital revenue. We ensure that students have toilet paper, paper towels, soap, and Band-Aids. We should ensure that students have period products as well. This is a wise investment since helping students who regularly miss school catch up is much more complicated and expensive than proactively ensuring that they don't miss class due to period poverty. Notably, this cost impacts schools' ability to invest in all students. Providing these products openly has the added benefit of normalizing conversations around periods to reduce the shame or stigma attached to this normal bodily function that impacts a full half of the human population. Today, you will hear from students, school nurses, Sharon Stein McNamara, president-elect from the Minnesota Psychological Association, and Beth Gendler of the National Council of Jewish Women Minnesota, who has led the way on addressing period poverty in our schools for many years. The Department of Education experts are also on hand to answer any questions. In addition, I urge you to read the numerous statements submitted by students sharing their personal experiences and perspectives around period poverty. The Advocates for Human Rights and Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid have also provided statements of support of this bill. Please join me today in voting to support students who have called for this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Feist. Members, we'll have a time, a certain vote on this bill at 1:45. We call our first testifier, Elif Asterik, a sophomore from Hopkins High School. My apologies if I butchered your name. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
thank you, Madam Chair Hassan and members of the committee for giving me this opportunity to speak about an issue that I hold deep passion for.
Have we lost the testifier? There must be technical difficulties. All right, let's move to the next testifier. We'll come back to Elif. The next testifier is Toby Sanders, senior from Hopkins High School.
Thank you, Madam Chair Hassan and committee members. My name is Toby Sanders, and I am currently a senior at Hopkins High School. I would like to share with you my insight based on personal experience on why I know HF 2750 is necessary to not only make period products more accessible, but to decrease the stigma surrounding menstruation. Throughout my years in high school, I have heard and experienced many unpleasant situations involving dealing with periods in school. One notable instance for me, and one I'm sure many menstruators can relate to, is when I bled through my jeans during the school day last year. I went to the bathroom towards the end of the day just to see that there was a red splotch on my light wash jeans. This was obviously mortifying, and I had no choice but to change my pad, leaving the stain there and praying that no one noticed. If there had been period products in my bathroom at school, this embarrassing situation would never have happened. Imagine an alternate reality in which this bill had been written and passed in 2020, and there are period products in the bathrooms of all Minnesota public and charter schools, including my school. Knowing that I did not have to discreetly grab a tampon or pad and head to the bathroom during class, I would have gone to the bathroom earlier, preventing the whole situation. By having period products in school bathrooms and commonly seen throughout schools, not only would they serve the purpose for which they were intended, but they would also decrease the stigma surrounding periods. In my case, maybe I would have asked a friend if they had a sweater that I could tie around my waist to hide the stain. My story is not a unique one, and the hypothetical scenario I shared can easily become reality if HF 2750 is passed. For the sake of all menstruators' hygiene, self-esteem, and well-being, I urge Minnesota lawmakers to vote to give all menstruating students in Minnesota free period products provided to them in school. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I believe Elif joined again. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. I'm sorry
about
that.
Okay, all right, no problem. Do you want to just introduce yourself for the record again and just continue with your
time? For sure. So my name is Elif Ozturk, and I am a sophomore at Hopkins High School. The first time that I became truly aware of the toll that a period takes on a young girl in school was during my eighth grade. Each and every day that I went to the girls' bathroom, I would hear whispers asking friends for products and could feel the heightened stress caused by that time of the month. What truly frustrated me, though, was the fact that I had friends who didn't just forget their products, but couldn't afford them in the first place. I had friends whose parents couldn't give them access to this luxury product, friends who decided to just skip school during that time because a 14-year-old girl can't always handle the stress of doing geometry while blood is leaking onto her chair. I thought to myself, how is this fair? How do we expect our girls to carry this burden on them throughout the school day and still perform well? My number one priority should be to learn, not to find a pad. So I could no longer be complacent with this injustice. During the fall of my ninth grade, after school, I would email various representatives, hoping they too would see my perspective on this. I then received an excited response from Representative Sandra Feist and began working with her. Later, we teamed with Beth Gendler at NCJW and decided on the language. This is a low-cost effort that would help so many lives, lives like mine, lives like your daughters, your nieces, and your granddaughters. At Hopkins, we didn't have tampons or pads available to us. We didn't have enough from our nurses, who often went into their own pockets for us. We provide free toilet paper, but we don't provide tampons. We have been failing our girls far too long. It is time to provide the one product that will allow them to peacefully go through the school day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Carolyn Deferrell, school nurse from District 287. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Oh, Carolyn is my legal name, but my mother calls me that when I'm in trouble. So I usually go by Kari, even though I'm in my 40s, my mom still scares me sometimes. All right, so Vice Chair Hassan, members of the committee, my name is Kari Diavro. I'm the licensed school nurse at South Education Center in Richfield, Minnesota, a program that's part of Intermediate 287. I come to you asking for support for the House File 2750 to Stockminster products in Minnesota bathrooms. I once read a quote by Gloria Steinem that stated if men menstruated, it would be an enviable, boastworthy sport. They could brag about how long, how much, sanitary supplies would be federally funded and free. And then there would be commercial brands like Joe Namath's Jock Shields for the lighter bachelor days. Now, my school every month, kids with good attendance will be notably absent, only to tell me upon their return that it was that time of the month with a school absence noted either due because of lack of affordability of feminine supplies or the fact that with clothing and with soils and leaks, they don't have access to laundry at home. Kids in my office often tell me how they use toilet paper, rolled up socks, even a sibling's pull-up or diapers inside their underwear as alternatives for sanitary pads. Working with some young teens from cultures where anything that is remotely sexual is a taboo subject. So just even coming to me in the health office can be a barrier as they tentatively try to ask without using any words, and their faces are red, and I get the message. In my school, I serve kids who are on the margins. Many of my special ed students, parents have had no choice but to take care of their unique children, drastically cutting into the family income. For my students who are in alternative or credit recovery programs, many attend school in the day and they work at night. They live in large extended family groups who pool their money to afford apartments. No money for extras. For the students who are homeless or highly mobile, the need for laundry is what draws them to school. They stay in my office and they wash their clothes that have become soiled during their monthly cycle as they don't have supplies. We stock toilet paper in public bathrooms because, as one of my most favorite children's books states, everybody poops. You're talking to the nurse. I have no filter. Last time I checked, men did not carry an extra roll of toilet paper in their backpacks. Public health dictates we wash our hands before returning to work, but we never question that the soap or paper towels is readily available. But a normal body function that only affects half of our population is a luxury item. For kids to learn, trauma-informed practice states a child must feel safe as well as identify as being part of the school community. for students born genetically female, part of a basic safety is to provide for their normal body needs. We need to raise our girls to feel empowered while also raising both genders to respect each other in all our beautiful forms. Stocking supplies in a bathroom is a small, small gesture, but the message that the girl child is valued, with their bodies respected in school, puts action behind the claim that we want them here, we want them in school. The poet Amanda Gorman, a voice of wisdom behind her years, says, "A quiet life isn't always peaceful, and the norms and the notations of what just is, with a shrug, isn't always justice." Stock the bathrooms. Allow my kids to be in school. Let them focus on their literature and not on the leaks. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Up next, we have Thomas Stinson, a school nurse from St. Paul Harding High School.
Hello. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair and committee members, for allowing me to testify today. I'm Dr. Thomas Stinson, a practicing licensed school nurse and a public health nurse. I have worked for the St. Paul Public Schools now going on almost 25 years. Today, I work at Harding High School, located in St. Paul, Minnesota. Our current enrollment is close to 1,900 students. I'm here in support to end period poverty in Minnesota schools. Every school I have worked at, period products has been an issue. School nurses don't have the funding for period products, and many pay for period products out of their own pocket. Period products is a basic need for our students, like soap and toilet paper in our restrooms. Every single day, students come to my health office for period products. Many students don't have the money or means to get period products, so they rely on the public schools. I see 40 to 50 students a day, and students may need to wait a while to talk with me. If we had period products available in the restrooms, the needs would be met faster. Making period products more accessible will also decrease the amount of lost educational time. It is common for students to have accidents with their menses, and I contribute this to not having period products available. If this happens, the student would need to go home and miss the rest of the school day, and this contributes to more lost educational time. We cannot expect individual schools to fund period products, because they will not. We need to have legislative support. Providing period products is a public in our public schools is a public health issue and should be a right. Please support our work to end period poverty in Minnesota schools. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And up next, we have Sharon McNamara. I know I'm butchering that name. President-elect for Minnesota Psychological Association. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair and members of the committee. I so appreciate this opportunity to testify. I am a licensed psychologist in Minnesota and have been in practice for 30 years, and this has been an issue. I've worked with adolescent girls throughout my entire career. This has been an issue for all that I can remember ever since I started working with girls. Many girls will have more depression and anxiety at the before their menstrual cycle or at the onset of first menses. And so when they are receiving the message that you have to be secretive, you have to be hush-hush, this is not something that is fully acknowledged as a normal bodily function that can be discussed openly, like products in the bathroom. It becomes a secret. It becomes something that they feel embarrassed about, ashamed about, have a lot of difficulty being able to get care. The basic need is for girls to feel cared for by the environment that they live in. So when we've got girls who already have trauma, say they have a difficult history of some sort, then to add this stress on top of that, where you don't know where you're going to find the product that you need to prevent being embarrassed. Many will avoid going to school. They will just say, I take that week off every month during my period. And then of course they don't, they fall behind in studies, don't have access, have to make up things. So, and this does, I think, disproportionately affect those girls that are lower income, But all girls struggle with it, even because you never know when a surprise is going to happen. And then what do you have to do? You have to try to find a girlfriend to borrow something from, or you have to try to be embarrassed and go to the school nurse and not always get received exactly the way that you would hoped. So thank you. I really think this would be a huge help for the mental health of girls in our state.
Thank you very much. Up next, we have Beth Gendler, Executive Director of National Council of Jewish Women Minnesota.
Beth? Thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan and members of the committee. At NCJW, we've been working to improve the quality
of life. Sorry, Beth, do you want to introduce yourself for the record?
I'm so sorry. I am Beth Gendler. I'm the Executive Director of National Council of Jewish Women Minnesota. And I'm trying to go quickly because I see that there are already hands up and I want to make sure that we have plenty of time for questions. So I'm actually going to skip a bunch of things and let you know that back in 2017, we received a message from a parent of a student who attends an alternative high school. And what she told us was that she had learned that the school where her son went was in desperate need of menstrual supplies. She said many of the students are homeless and simply don't have the means to buy these products. So she reached out in hopes that we could help. So since that message, since that day, we have been fortunate to receive a huge donation of products and have distributed 160,000 pads and tampons to schools throughout Minnesota. And I think if that doesn't point to a need, nothing does. Our supply is starting to dwindle, and we need to ensure that our kids, that Minnesota kids, aren't dependent on our teeny tiny nonprofit with a staff of three to secure donations and funding to meet this ongoing basic need. We also surveyed school staff, learning that sometimes students miss school when they have their period. We heard from teachers and nurses like Tom and Kari, who use personal funds to buy supplies, and students like Elif and Toby, who rely on word of mouth networks so students know where they can go for help. So just as it took us at NCJW 125 years to recognize period poverty as a problem right here in Minnesota schools and not just in developing countries, I think that we as a society have simply overlooked that period products are a basic bathroom hygiene need, no different from toilet paper and hand soap. There's nothing partisan about periods, and it's simply time to correct this oversight and make sure that schools have the resources to adequately stock their bathrooms. Please support House File 2750. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then we have two public testifiers. Tori Robarcha, a student from Egan High School. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Tori Robarge. I am a senior at Egan High School. I'd like to thank you, Vice Chair Hassan, for having us here, and Representative Feist for not only using your voice, but allowing me to use mine. As a part of our research period, we wrote and administered a menstruation-based survey to our student body at Egan High School. We found overwhelming support for the institution of free products. When asked if there had ever been a time when they didn't have access to a product, 195 students offered us with answers. 66% said that they didn't want to miss class by going to the nurse's office. 35% said that their teacher wouldn't let them go. 18% said that they did not have the money to give to the nurse. And 43% said that they were too scared or embarrassed to ask the nurse for one personally. By implementing these boxes into our bathrooms, we have provided a shameless, non-confrontational solution for those who need these products. Menstruators spend around 2,500 days of their lives on their period. According to Business Wire, almost 1 in 5 Americans have missed school due to a lack of period products. This can put those individuals on the track towards having a harder time graduating. This also puts them behind those that don't menstruate when it comes to their education. Hundreds of thousands of people are missing out on a critical opportunity, such as an equal, well-deserved education. We expect that due to the boxes that we have implemented in our schools, we will see an increase in attendance. People that don't regularly have access to these products at home don't have to be fearful of being unclean or insecure about a lack of hygiene that's out of their control. This can help them in the building as they are no longer at risk of peer judgment. By providing these products inside of the bathrooms themselves, we are avoiding the journey to the nurse's office. Students are able to go to the bathroom, grab a product right off of the wall, and return to class. Not only are we keeping students in the building, we are keeping them in their seats. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then we also have Evelyn Gore, a student from Egan High School.
Hi, thank you, Vice Chair, Madam Hassan, and committee members. My name is Evelyn Gore, and I am a senior at Egan High School, and I was one of the leaders who worked to end period poverty in District 196. The District 196 Period Poverty Project initially started out through an Honors 10 speech class, where we were given the task to write and present a group speech about a topic that we were passionate about. In an all-women's group, we found common ground with the issue of period poverty. As we spent more time researching the jarring statistics, our passion grew. I remember sitting in class and shyly asking the question, what if we could actually make a difference? I was expecting a pessimistic response, but to my surprise, I was met with a response full of passion just as strong as mine. Within minutes, we were emailing our superintendent, Mary Krieger, and inviting her to watch our speech presentation. After partnering up with the Women's Empowerment Club at our school, speaking at several school board meetings, and surveying our own school body, District 196 awarded us with a $10,000 grant. This grant tangibly allowed us to actually make a difference. Today in District 196, you can find free tampons and pads in the gender-neutral women's and at least one men's bathroom for every school. This school year has been the only regular school year where there have been menstrual products available in the bathrooms in our district. And after not even a full year of our school year, our Period Poverty Project has made an impact in more ways than we could have imagined. Hundreds of students who weren't able to afford tampons or pads are now given the access that they always deserved. Our students who don't have tampons or pads at home can now take as many as they need. Our students who previously would have wasted time in the bathroom stall, frantically texting other students, desperately asking for a tampon, now won't have to miss class. Our students who previously would have had to leave class to go give their friend an extra tampon now won't have to miss class. Our students who didn't have a pad now won't be forced to create a makeshift toilet paper pad in the bathroom. Our students that menstruate who don't identify as women can finally find and use the products that they need without having to confront a potentially traumatizing situation. And our nurses who are paying out of pocket in order to provide the necessities for their students now don't have to. And with that big of an impact, we can finally confidently say that the period poverty is no longer found in District 196. It is extremely important that this bill gets passed so that we can too end period poverty for all students in Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Member questions, Rep. Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question is for the bill author, and just wondering, Representative Feist, why the mandate here and not an option for more local control and giving districts a choice on this, and then a choice whether to tap into the extra funding that would be provided? I just see this, I understand mandates for life and death issues, you know, for example, we're going to hear about the EpiPens and so on and that kind of thing. But in this case, it would seem to me maybe a better way to go would be to allow districts this option and then also the option for funding. And that way they're not tied into having to provide this in a certain way. For example, in the restrooms, if they find there's a lot of issues, say with theft or that kind of thing, they can come up with a different plan that fits their students and districts' needs on how to dispense these things. So just curious about the choice issue versus the mandate issue.
Rep. Feist?
Yep. Thank you, Representative Bennett. I believe that if only half of the schools in Minnesota were providing toilet paper and hand soap and paper towels, then the legislature would see it fit to mandate that all of the schools provide these products that are essential for the basic bodily functions of half the students in our schools today. And so because that is not happening around period products, which half of our students need in order to attend school, that's why we decided to structure this as a mandate. And regarding theft, we actually have undergone a number of studies around how to provide the products and whether or not, you know, very expensive, secure dispensers were necessary. And in the schools that have provided them, like a lot of the students have testified about today, they have found that that has not been an issue, which is really nice to hear in this day and age with weird TikTok challenges.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Rep. Bennett, follow up?
Yes, please, thank you. As I think we're kind of selling our school districts short on their decision-making. Obviously, I believe schools are gonna provide toilet paper and everything. that argument doesn't quite fit for me there. I just feel like districts are being mandated more and more on so many things. And we need to encourage and provide, you know, funds for many of these things, but to force them to do it just doesn't make sense in a mandate to me. And I think they've got the wisdom and the ability to make these choices for their students. I just don't see the need to mandate it. So I would support this if it was a choice for districts and offering them the ability to be able to fund this. But as another mandate, I don't understand it. And I don't see how that really helps our districts. I think the local control on this issue is the way to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Bennett. Rep. Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is also for the author, but first of all, you know, in rural Minnesota, we've had a lot of benefactors who have been generous in providing for these products. Granted, they are usually through the school nurse or through some, maybe the dean or the counselors. But I find it interesting that we've had no testimony from students who live in rural Minnesota. So. You know, I don't know if there's a big difference here in some respect, but that's kind of interesting to me. Another point before I ask my question is that, you know, there's not such a stigma today around menstruation because even my grandson, who's in fifth grade, is learning about the differences between boys and girls and about this menstruation period, because eventually it is what provides for the birth of a child, for the conception of a child, for a child to grow in the womb. And so they're learning this, unlike, you know, I did not learn this in fifth grade, at least. It took me into high school to learn this in biology class. But I think our health teachers are doing a really good job of helping boys and girls understand the differences, because boys have to know that they may masturbate too, and that, you know, could be embarrassing. But for boys and girls to understand today, our body functions is really important. But my question for you, Representative Feist, is, you know, the capital operating is also a levy. So what if districts decide to levy? That's not going to sit well with my taxpayers who do not like having to pay for board-approved levies, levies that they have had nothing to do with. So could you explain why... are you going to have an amendment so they don't levy, or are you leaving this wide open as far as that revenue source?
Rep. Feist.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Regarding whether this is an issue that impacts the entire state, I would say that poverty is an issue that impacts the entire state, and so period poverty as well is something that impacts all of our students in the metro area and statewide. Regarding how the operating revenue works structurally. I would turn that question over to Tim Strom, who is the guru, and he can clarify. And then based on his clarification, I might have some additional input, but he can answer that technical question about how it functions as a levy.
Tim?
Madam Chair, members, the operating capital is a highly equalized aid and levy, which means the vast majority of the money comes through state aid. There would be a small levy impact. The author, if she wished to address this, could increase the equalizing factor statewide by a very small amount, and the full levy cost then would roll over to the aid so that the full amount would be in state aid. In terms of the revenue impact, at $2 per pupil, there's just under a million students, about 950,000 students currently funding pupils in the state. So the impact would be on revenue would be double that at just under $2 million per year. And as I said, the operating capital is a mix of aid and levy. To keep the levy part entirely constant, one could, so that there would no increase statewide, one could increase the equalizing factor by just a very small amount.
Thank you, Tim.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Hassan, Vice Chair. Thank you, Mr. Strom. I understand that. But because of the increase in property values and the increase in our property taxes, at least in rural Minnesota, where I live, and counties having to raise their levies, school districts raising their levies, cities raising their levies. People are just much more alert to board approved levies and really have questions. So my hope is that as this bill proceeds, that we could find different ways to provide this funding. I know that poverty exists across the state. And I think in East Central Minnesota, we do a really good job of providing contributions to our school districts to be used for helping with student needs. And I know one of those is for tampons or for pads for our girls, though they may not be distributed within the restroom or the girls' bathroom, I'm not sure. But, you know, I think we really care about our children. And, you know, when we become adults or college students, we have to take care of ourselves. So I think it's important that, you know, if we can provide this in a loving way, that's through a benefactor or benefactors, maybe even tampon and pad companies, that we will instill in our young girls that this is something that is cared about by all of us, but it's not something we're going to ask the taxpayers to cover like we do with toilet tissue and paper towels. This is a different issue, and you know, I'm still concerned about the approach that we're using. I thank the testifiers, especially from Egan, Ms. Gore, who talked about a local way, a campaign that they provided to take care of these costs without coming to the legislature. And I think that's really a great idea. Maybe more student leaders can come up with those ideas. So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Gore.
Thank you, Rep. Erickson. I want to remind everybody that this is a policy committee, and this bill is going to Ed Finance. So folks will have plenty of time to ask questions about finances. Rep. Poston, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, you just kind of answered for me. This is a financial question. Is there a fiscal note on this at this point in time, Representative Feist?
Rep. Feist?
The cost of this bill would be a little under $2 million, as Mr. Strom mentioned. It's $2 per pupil in that operating expense or operating revenue.
Thank you. Rep. Poston, okay. A follow-up quickly?
Just another quick question. It seems to me that, and I've talked to a couple of teachers that think there could be some problems with these machines in the restrooms, managing or controlling the inventory, and there could be some problems with the actual machines as well. You know, we've seen a lot of this stuff on TikTok lately with destroying things in restrooms at schools. Do you have any concern about that, Representative Feist?
Rep. Feist?
I do not, because we are not going to use those machines, which are incredibly costly. And the products that have been, so fortunately, we won't have to deal with that. And in the many situations where students have had those products provided in baskets, there haven't been issues with theft or destruction, which is just really nice to hear that people respect those products and that their fellow students might need them.
Thank you, Rep. Feist. Rep. Poston, I don't want to cut you off. I have less than a few minutes until we vote on the bill. Do you have a quick follow-up and then we move on?
I'm fine, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Rep. Waslowick, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question. I just want to say thank you to Representative Feist for bringing this bill forward. As somebody who, you know, went through middle school and high school menstruating, it was really important. It would be really important to me to have access to those resources in the school bathrooms. I am not that far removed from school, and it was still a pretty sort of hush-hush thing in terms of, you know, passing the supplies around and making sure people had them and whatnot. So I just want to thank the bill author for bringing this forward to ensure that, you know, people who menstruate have access to the supplies in a space that they're already in when they need to address the problem, and in a space where they may be more comfortable than perhaps going to a nurse's office or somewhere else. I think for some students, they have no qualms about talking about menstruation with people. And for some students, it's still a thing that is very private and personal. And so for them to have access to these supplies at no cost in a space that is more private and personal for them, I think is really, really great. So thank you, Representative Feist, for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Rep. Bosselwick. Rep. Berg, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment because I want to make sure that our viewers and our testifiers and anybody listening to this understands that I think there's been a mistake in verbiage by a couple comments when they talked about theft of these products, because the intent behind the bill, as I understand it, is to help our students that menstruate have products available to them. And I'd like to point out that you don't stop menstruating when the school day is over. So if they are taking those products home with them, that's because there's a need for it. And that's what we're addressing with this bill. I just wanted to make sure anybody viewing this understood that that was a mistake in verbiage. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Rep. Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks also to Representative Feist and the testifiers today. I just want to say that I think having these in the bathroom is very important for the reasons that Representative Wasilewicz outlined already. But also I found in the middle school in our district, that they don't allow kids to carry bags in school anymore for security reasons. So maybe when some of us were back to school and we could tuck our products away in our bags, it's a little bit more difficult now for students back in the day. I'll also say to the comment about this perhaps not being a statewide issue, I'm, you know, really confused by that because children across the state and girls across the state are having their periods. But there is a letter from Legal Aid in the packet that they mentioned that a statewide survey of parents accessing MFIP mentioned menstrual products as a top five affordability concern. So clearly there's a statewide need. And there's a need because this is an essential hygiene product. So I'm really happy to support this bill for all of those reasons. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Mueller. Rep. Bennett, you have your hand up again. Do you have a quick comment on? Because I want to give the last, comment to the bill author, and we got to vote on this bill soon.
Very quick, Madam Chair. Thank you. Just a comment, because I want to make sure wasn't misunderstood. I wasn't, in my comments anyway, trying to infer that this is not a statewide problem. But my comment is it should really be a local choice, because some school districts are probably handling this just fine without the, added mandate. Others, maybe need those options. I think it just needs to be wiser to leave it up to local control and not always do this universal one size fits all. We all have to do it the same way. Because a lot of our districts have creatively figured out how to handle this issue without a mandate. So just a comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Bennett. Rep. Feist, last word on this before we vote on it.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Thanks again to our testifiers and to my colleagues who had questions. We talked about having, charitable donations support these students. We talked about how it might not impact students across the state. And I would just say that this impacts half of the students in our schools today. It impacts students across the state. And I think that if we mandate providing these products and we fund it with state dollars, then we are telling these students that they are not an afterthought, that their access to the classroom is integral to our ability to ensure that all students in Minnesota have access to a wonderful education. So I would urge my colleagues here to support this bill. I'm very excited about it and very grateful to everyone who shared their personal experiences today. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Feist. Rep. Christensen, I see that you have your hand up.
Yeah, it's just quick. I would like to ask for a roll call on this.
A roll call has been requested.
Thank you.
Rep. Feist renews her motion to refer House File 2750 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson. Chair Richardson is excused. Vice Chair Hassan.
Vice Chair Hassan, aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Berg votes yes.
Representative Bowe? Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Joskowski?
Oh.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller abstains until she sees a fiscal note, please.
Representative Poston?
Poston, you are muted.
I'm sorry, Chair. I'll abstain until I see the fiscal note also. Thank you.
Representative Scott?
Oh.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wozlowick?
Yes.
Representative Bowe?
I will vote aye, but I would like to see that financial impact as well. Thank you.
Madam Vice Chair, there are 12 ayes and 4 nays.
With 12 ayes and 4 nays, congratulations, Rep. Feist. You are on your way to Ed Finance. The bill passes. Thank you.
Madam Chair, doesn't she have to record the abstains as well?
Oh, yes, yes.
And there were 2 abstentions of the votes.
Okay, we got to do it again. So for the record, there was it 12 ayes?
Yep, Madam Vice Chair, there were 12 ayes, 4 nays, and 2 abstentions. 12 ayes,
4 nays, and 2 abstains. The motion passes and the bill is referred to Education Finance. Up next, we have House File 1883. Do we have Rep. Morrison? Yes, we do. So I move House File 1883 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Welcome to the committee, Rep. Morrison. I believe you have an A1 amendment, and I move the amendment to get the bill in the shape the author wishes. Rep. Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present House File 1883, which is a bill to provide naloxone.
Rep. Morrison, do you want to first, let's move your A1 amendment and amend the bill, and then we'll move on to explaining the bill.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A1 amendment, which just changes the start date from 2021 to 2022.
All right, so all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Members will have a certain time to vote on this bill at 2:15. There's also an A2 amendment posted for this bill, but because it was not posted prior to the committee deadline, it will be adopted in the bill's next committee stop. So, Rep. Morrison, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that A2 amendment provides some clarifying language and direction to the commissioners of MDH and MDE. And as Madam Chair said, the plan is to adopt it at its next stop in the Finance Committee. The opioid epidemic is accelerating. More than 100,000 Americans have died of opioid overdose last year, more than gun deaths and motor vehicle accidents combined. Minnesota is not immune, and our kids are not immune. Naloxone, which is commonly known by the brand name Narcan, is an opioid antagonist, a medication that's used to reverse the effects of opioids. It's easy to use and is literally a lifesaver. As the opioid epidemic accelerates and the landscape of the epidemic changes, as fentanyl increasingly infiltrates, and in many cases without the user's knowledge, we need to ensure that naloxone is widely available so that lives can be saved. Ensuring that our schools have access to naloxone is critical so that no child dies by overdose at one of our schools. This bill is the brainchild of my constituent, Colleen Ronnie, who has made educating kids about opioids and preventing overdose deaths her life's work after losing her child to an overdose. She founded Change the Outcome, a nonprofit that aims to combat the substance use and overdose epidemic through educational initiatives for young people. Colleen's been in many schools, reaching literally thousands of young people through her tireless work to save lives. I'm proud to know her. She certainly has taught me a lot, and I'm excited that she is here and willing to testify for this bill. We're grateful for the collaboration of Representatives Dave Baker and Aaron Cagle, as well as the Departments of Education and Health and school nurses, to craft a bill that works for the schools and staff. So with that, I will turn it over, Madam Chair, to the testifier.
Thank you, Rep. Morrison. Our testifier, Colleen Rooney, would you like, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, hello, thank you for having me today. I appreciate the opportunity. My name is Colleen Rooney, as Dr. Morrison said, Representative Morrison, sorry. I am the Executive Director of Change the Outcome. Change the Outcome is a nonprofit that delivers education on the opioid epidemic to schools throughout Minnesota. In my role over the past 5 years, I have been in dozens of school districts, more than 100 schools, and have met directly with more than 45,000 teachers and students. I have seen firsthand how the opioid epidemic continues to grow and evolve, and how young Minnesotans are being impacted. Over the last decade, overdose deaths in Minnesota have continued to increase every single year. Last year, Minnesota was ranked in the top 10 for states that saw the largest increases in overdose deaths. We had a 42% increase in overdose fatalities from the previous 12 months. 15 to 34-year-olds had the greatest number of emergency room visits and hospital admissions for opioid-involved overdoses last year. The most recent Minnesota student survey showed that the substance use disorder and misuse of prescription pain medications in eighth graders doubled from 2016 to 2019, with seventh graders experiencing almost the same increase. That's a lot of middle schoolers self-reporting the use of pain medications. A report by the CDC in 2020 stated that 20% of 12th graders reported taking medication not prescribed for them. And just a few months ago, the Department of Drug Enforcement was warning the public that 2 out of 5 counterfeit pills they were confiscating, which are widely available to teenagers, are potentially lethal because of the fentanyl contained in them. The data is clear and convincing. Young people are using substances and they are losing their lives. There's simply no way to look away from the fact that substance use does not stop at the doors of schools, nor are those doors closed to parents or adults who may be struggling with opioid use disorder and attending school functions. We need only to hear the news of the 3 overdoses that occurred last week in a Connecticut middle school, which tragically led to the death of one of those students, to know that Minnesota must be proactive in having Narcan, the opioid overdose reversal medication, in our schools before we're on the national news for a similar tragedy. You know, I watched that principal lament the fact that they knew that it was a problem and that they waited. They didn't act to have Narcan in their school. There is not an epidemic of anaphylactic shock or heart attacks, yet we keep tools to respond to these medical events in all of our schools at a tremendous cost. It can cost as little as $150 to provide 4 life-saving doses of nasal Narcan to a school, or 15 doses of the intramuscular naloxone. I've worked with dozens of young people in recovery, all who acknowledge using opioids while they were in middle or high school. Thankfully, all of them struggled with their opioid use disorder before the overwhelming surge of fentanyl in the current drug supply, or the prevalence of counterfeit pills, and they are likely to be able to continue their recovery because of that. They would all say if they were using or in the midst of active addiction with the current situation, the current environment of drug use, they would probably not survive it. One of my volunteers tells a powerful story of overdosing in her high school health class and being revived only because her mother was a registered nurse and took steps to make sure this young woman always had Narcan in her backpack. Teachers know they have students who are struggling with opioid use. They used to be able to rely on school liaison officers who were on site and could respond to overdoses in schools if one occurred. That safety net has largely been stripped away from many schools that even had that capability. In many rural schools, there are no school liaison officers. And in those schools, oftentimes a call to an EMT will take much more than 5 minutes. Teachers are asking me, as we are in schools, what they can do to make sure that they have Narcan in their nurse's office or that their staff are trained. They know that their students are struggling or that they have people in their building who are struggling with opioid use disorder. Right now, I'm aware of only 13 out of 327 Minnesota school districts that keep Narcan on site and have a protocol for responding to an overdose in their schools. On the flip side, I'm also aware of a number of schools where a student has experienced an overdose. There was one just last week in a St. Paul high school, another 4 weeks ago in a suburban high school, and these are occurring in students who are between the ages of 12 and 19 years old. Schools are not reporting these incidents for many reasons, but they are happening. Administering Narcan poses no risk to a person who is receiving it, and a state law allows anyone to purchase it without a prescription. It only takes about 10 minutes to be trained on how to recognize an overdose and administer Narcan. Someone once asked me, like, how can you ask or expect teachers or school staff members to administer Narcan to a student who might experience an overdose? My response, how can you ask a teacher or a classmate to watch a student die in front of them because they don't have a simple tool that allows to help them breathe? Narcan can do that. We must act now to provide schools with this simple tool to save lives. I implore you to please support House File 1883. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We also have a public testifier, Jolly Holland. Do we have Jolly on the call?
Yeah, Jolie, thank you.
Jolie, sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the committee. I'm Jolie Holland. I represent SNOM, which is the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota, and I serve as the legislative chair of SNOM. In my job as a licensed school nurse, I serve approximately 1,600 students in 11 locations in a rural district. And SNOM supports the intent of HF 1883 with the amendment regarding having emergency Narcan available. And we do appreciate Representative Morrison's willingness to work on the legislation as it moves forward. We do need to address some important concerns. We want to keep our students safe and healthy. And in order to implement many of the school health policies in our schools that come before the legislature, we need to address who's in charge of implementing these policies and laws. Our Minnesota schools don't have an adequate number of licensed school nurses in our schools. And so this is about access and equity. How does this bill play out in a district that doesn't have an LSN, or a district that has one LSN with a large regional area? In Minnesota, the law only requires an LSN if there's 1,000 students or more. We believe that nearly one-third to two-thirds of our schools don't have an LSN, and many LSNs oversee multiple sites, such as myself. The state doesn't have data to accurately determine this. So without any clear data on who's taking care of the health care of our students in schools, it's very difficult for you as legislators to make decisions without that data. Until last month, there hasn't been an LSN at the Minnesota Department of Education for over 5 years, and currently it's only a temporary position. This position is absolutely critical to provide guidance to LSNs, health offices, and school districts about issues like this. We're seeing serious medical conditions in schools like never before, and COVID is on top of that. So we hope that Representative Morrison's bill to provide a permanent LSN at MDE will become law. So in summary, We believe the following issues must be addressed by the committee to determine best practices as required in the amendment to HF 1883. First, we must have an LSN on the Committee of Best Practices. And second, we ask that the must be changed to may. And third, how will ongoing training of staff be carried out and funding? And what about after school activities? Also, with the issue of limited qualified staffing, who's making the assessment of someone having a drug overdose? Nurses are trained to not make medical diagnoses, but work under physician's orders. So who will be the medical director giving orders, and who will follow up if Narcan is used in a school for outcome reporting purposes? And fifth, the lack of accurate school health data also needs to be addressed. So again, we want to thank Representative Morrison for her willingness to work with us, and we look forward to working with the committee to work out the details. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Member questions. Rep. Erickson, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Representative Hassan, Vice Chair. I have a couple of technical questions first. I want to make sure the record shows that you moved both the bill and the amendment. So I just want to make that comment since Representative Morrison does not serve on our committee. And did you give the direction for where 1883 as amended will move?
We do have
this important amendment.
I did move the bill and I did move the amendment, and I stated for the record that it's going to education finance. I also noted that there was a second amendment that didn't make it to committee deadline, and that amendment will be added to the bill in education finance.
Thank you for those verifications. And I want to applaud Ms. Holland for bringing forth these ideas that I believe must have come from the Nurses Association for this amendment that I guess now we'll deal with in finance. This would have been a good policy discussion since we're having a little issue today about whether we discuss finance or policy in policy. But these are, as I'm reading the A2 amendment, which we'll deal with when it gets to finance, I presume, has some really good points. And I think Ms. Holland has made even more important points that we need to consider. And we also need to keep in mind that SROs can administer Narcan. But I think with the questions Ms. Holland has raised, we need to give very serious thought to how this is going to play out. This is a good bill. As amended, it will be a very good bill, but we have some questions that need answering. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Erickson. I don't believe we are having any problems with talking about whether we're talking about finance or policy. I did state for the record in the previous bill that this is a education policy committee, and we're only discussing policy-related issues. I want to clear that for the record. Rep. Ball.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just kind of wonder if this is a one-size-fits-all approach that does not really fit all, and that focuses on the word must versus may. A couple other quick questions, and that is, there's a lot of opioid antagonists out there, but the bill doesn't specify which one will be used. Naloxone is probably the most common with Narcan, but there are others as well. And so I wonder which substances will be used, who will store it, who will disseminate it, and what about shelf life? There is a definite shelf life. Could there be liability for a school if they use a product that has an expired shelf life and is less effective? Thank you.
Thank you. Rep. Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bo. Those are all great points. And I think will be addressed in the A2 amendment at this bill's next stop. We do change from must to may, and set up a committee to address all of the issues that you brought up that are all important ones. So thank you for highlighting those.
Thank you. Follow-up, Repo?
No, I think that's fine. I'll look forward to seeing what we get with A2. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Rep. Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to our testifiers today and to Representative Morrison on this bill. I have a question about the word, the language in the bill says that all this applies to all schools. That would include elementary schools. And I'm just wondering if there's any data out there on how common overdoses are at the elementary level, or is this a bill that maybe we could even change the language to just junior high and high schools?
Rep. Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. That I don't have that data at my fingertips, but that is, I think, an important question and one that intuitively I would think, boy, we can't need Narcan in our grade schools. But unfortunately, the landscape of this epidemic is evolving, and fentanyl is showing up in medications that are not expected for it to be there. And so younger kids are able to access it. And I know this has happened across the country, but I don't have hard data for you. That should definitely be a part of this continuing conversation about how best to proceed with that. So thanks for highlighting that point.
Scott, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Rep. Morrison. I'm wondering if Ms. Ronnie might have any data, or Ms. Holland, since she's kind of on the ground at the schools as a nurse. I'm not saying that it would never happen, and it probably has happened, but I'm just wondering how common it is in our grade schools.
If I may, I would say that because this epidemic is so widespread and always, as Representative Morrison said, evolving, it's 12-year-olds who can access medications in their home. And I don't know what the age of fifth graders or sixth graders are. I don't spend a lot of time in elementary schools, but it's as much about adults in the building as it is about students. And it's a place, schools are a place where people congregate. Whether they're there for a student function or athletic event, a choir performance, it's as much for every person that enters the building as it is students. It's just that students and teachers are the people who are seeing it really firsthand and acknowledging that there's an issue. So if that answers your question, there's not good data. Schools don't want to be keeping track of this stuff in the sense that, for privacy reasons, it's juveniles. I suspect that they're keeping data on a per district basis, but it's not something that's talked about or discussed publicly.
Thank you. Ms. Holland, do you have something to add?
I think it's a great idea to have opioid antagonists available. I worked in ICU in California, so I took care of lots of drug overdoses. I also worked at New Beginnings for 5 years and took care of lots of patients in withdrawal. So I know that you can't look at someone and necessarily know that they're using or not. So it's a great idea. We just have to figure out, how do we have it available after hours for activities that are at the school, and who's going to assess the person and give it properly so that, you know, it's done in a proper manner.
Thank you both. Rep. Scott, do you have still a follow-up?
I was just a comment, Madam Chair. And, okay. You know, Representative Morrison mentioned the fentanyl issue, and that whole idea of fentanyl-laced narcotics has just escalated since the opening of our southern border. It's just pouring over and it's causing so many deaths. And so I would just hope that, that we need to look at closing that southern border to prevent this from happening. It would actually save lives. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Rep. Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Morrison, for bringing this. We've been talking about how we support our families in this space for a long time. I've talked about my time as a Native American liaison and how these are conversations that we've been having a long time. I just, for some clarification, because I've tried to read through the original language and then now the amendments, would this be something that would be just in schools to administer well on school property, or is this something that we're thinking that school employees or school staff would have? Because as liaisons, one of our biggest jobs was to go out to home visits. And the argument there was that walking into homes, sometimes we may be the life-saving opportunity, yet we as liaisons were really hesitant because we didn't feel medically trained well enough to do that. Also, to be quite frank, that's like way out of our pay lane and what they were asking us to do. And so I'm just wondering what the conversations are around the difference in just administering this in the buildings, in school facilities, or is this going to be something that we're going to expect staff that's doing home visits and potentially coming across some of these harms while we're out doing our work in communities? What is the difference in those obligations?
Ms. Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Keeler. That's a really interesting point that you're making and an important one. The intent has been to think about on school property. We haven't addressed the home visiting piece of it, but that let's engage and continue that conversation because I think you make an interesting point, an important one.
Keeler, do you have a follow up?
No, I don't, but I would like to have follow up conversation about that. Thank you.
Ms. Holland, do you have something to add to this?
Well, I would like to add that we would really like to, the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota is really asking legislators to look at the health data that we have regarding schools so that we know, what we're looking at for our student health needs. And right now, the only data that is really reported to MDE are immunizations and reportable diseases. And so we'd really like to address that. And we're hoping to do that in this next session.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. Rep. Dostkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just a question for the author. Here we go again, like the last bill, telling schools what they have to do. State government trying to become the statewide school board. I just don't understand it. So are we smarter than the school boards in Minnesota?
Is that a question to the author?
Yes.
Rep. Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dostkowski, I don't think anyone is implying that we're smarter than school boards. We're trying to save kids' lives with this bill.
So, Madam Chair.
Rep. Dostkowski, do you have a follow-up?
Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative Morrison, can this local school board save kids' lives?
Rep. Morrison.
Madam Chair, Representative Dostkowski, I don't think I understand your question.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could, I guess I won't get any answers here, but the reality is this is rather arrogant of us and of state government to want to cast, like the last bill, onto local school boards, another couple of items on top of the long list of things the local school boards got to sort through as they try to create their priorities with the funds they have, with the uniqueness of their kids and the problems that they do or don't have. And we think that our wisdom here in St. Paul is more wise for them than they themselves are for the kids in their schools. I think that's arrogant for us to do that. We continue to bring these bills. And I know, Madam Chair, it's not a fiscal bill. We'll talk about the fiscal part, but it's an unfunded mandate. And it's arrogant for us to tell school districts they don't know better for themselves. And so state government has to tell them because they don't know any better. I find that insulting to them. I find it arrogant behavior. We got to stop doing this. This is almost all I hear from my superintendents is stop doing things to us and let us run our own schools. That's the wisdom, Madam Chair. This approach, and I'm sure there'll be more bills from the Democrats to want to put more and more mandates on our schools, but we got to stop doing this.
Thank you, Rep. Dostkowski. Seeing no further questions, I renew the motion to refer House File 1883 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson. Chair Richardson is excused. Vice Chair Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Erickson.
Erickson is aye.
Representative Bennett.
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Dostkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Aye.
Madam Vice Chair, there are 17 ayes, one nay, and one excuse vote.
With 17 ayes and one nay, House File 1884 is referred as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. Congratulations, Rep. Morrison. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep. Up next, we have House File 224. Rep. Quam, welcome to the committee. And I move House File 224 to be laid over for possible inclusion with the omnibus bill. Rep. Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this bill came because a high school student in Byron felt it was important with so many of her fellow students with allergies and other conditions where an EpiPen could save a life. And what I did is had that student directly connected to the reviser. So the verbiage is in the voice of the student that brought forth the bill. I understand there may be a desire for tweaking or clarification on the language to best fit our current systems, but I believe the intent of having something in the school that is handy and people are trained that could save the life of one of our children is important. And so thank you for the consideration on this bill.
Thank you, Rep. Quam. And I believe there is a public testifier. Ms. Holland.
Well, again, good afternoon, Madam Chair and Committee. Again, I'm Jolie Holland, and I represent the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota, otherwise known as SNOM, and I serve as the legislative chair. I'm an LSN in a rural school district with approximately 1,600 students and 11 locations. We believe HF 224 has excellent intentions, and we strongly support the policies that improve the health and safety of our students. And we do agree that EpiPen saves lives. It's also critical for student health and safety to ensure a properly trained and qualified individual assess the health needs and follow appropriate protocols. So in order for this bill to be successful, we feel that more funding for staff and training, implementation, and purchase of EpiPens need to be considered. So we present you with some logistical questions to consider about how this bill can be implemented. First, who are we going to have determining that the person is having an anaphylactic reaction? Anaphylaxis can present itself in many ways, and my last couple students only had nausea and vomiting as their first signs of anaphylaxis. And are two pens per school the appropriate number of EpiPens? Some schools have 150 students and some have 1,000. This is a matter of access and equity. Plus, there's two different dosing options, a junior and an adult dose, which again constitutes more decision-making for the individual giving the injection. Second, currently all schools in Minnesota are eligible to order a maximum of two free twin pack EpiPens once a calendar year under the EpiPen for Schools program, but there's usually a delay to get them. If a student doesn't bring their regularly prescribed EpiPen to school, will the school supply become the backup pharmacy? And the school will need to order more at their own expense to keep up the supply. They're costly, and an internet search today put their cost between $100 to $400 per EpiPen. If the EpiPens are to be stocked in the health offices, who will legally oversee the administration, storage, and accessibility? What about the parents' ability to opt out if they don't want an EpiPen administered to their child due to health conditions? And what about the use of these medications in school districts who only have one LSN that goes to multiple sites, such as I do, that are miles apart?
And what is the school district's and the LSN's responsibility for occurrences after school activities? How do we make sure that EpiPens are available at events after school? So again, we want to remind you that a conservative estimate of licensed school nurses to student ratio is approximately one nurse, one LSN, to over 1,400 students, and that between one-third to two-thirds of schools in Minnesota have no school nurse. With the questions we presented earlier, you can understand why we are concerned about the health and safety of our kids. We do feel that EpiPens are extremely important and necessary for some students, and that they should be administered by trained and qualified individuals who can assess the health needs of the student competently. So thank you so much for letting me testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. Member questions. Rep. Scott, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And so my question is to Ms. Holland. And I'm just wondering what happens now. I know some kids are sent to school with an EpiPen. What if the school nurse is 20 miles away in another school and the kid is having a reaction? Who administers it now? The teacher? Because there can't always be, you know, a licensed school nurse on site, as you said, but something's being done now to protect these kids.
Well, in our school district, Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. Currently in our district, as an LSN, we have health plans that we've developed, and I do training with the staff and the teachers and my health assistants to make sure if Johnny has an anaphylactic reaction that we're taking steps to recognize it and treat it. Many of our students, we have self-carry their EpiPens if they're, you know, if we deem that they can do that and successfully, like even on their belt, we have a student that carries it right on his belt. We have several that have a little purse type thing that they carry with them. So we do make sure that they have their EpiPens available, but I do know that some of our parents are having a terrible time trying to afford the EpiPens. So that does impact us. And actually, we're waiting for our stock of the EpiPens for school to get to us. But as I mentioned in my testimony, there is a delay to get them.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. Rep. Scott?
No, that's it. I just wondered how this was being handled now, because I knew it had to be handled now. So
thank you. Rep. Kaler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question, or maybe a couple questions, are for the author. Similar to my last question, I agree. I think that these things are really important to have accessible, but it's hard just to have anybody be willing to determine, one, when we need to utilize this, how to use this, and what comfort level our staff has. And so in the language that I see, again, it just says that it's administered by a school personnel to a student or other individual if in good faith it's determined. Is that going to be just on school property, or is this again putting it in the hands of home liaisons that are potentially still school employees and then could potentially come up with a student in a home visit situation? The language doesn't determine where that line is drawn. Can you please answer that? And then I do have a follow-up.
Rep. Guam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having been on a school board and also on the governing board of a special education district, there are policies which generally branch down from the state organization, but the schools would have policy on trained training and requirements and specifics. And my assumption is that there's already that existing. I'm aware of districts that have athletic trainers, you know, some of their coaching and teaching staff are also certified EMTs. They've got a background in athletic training, et cetera. And so they are also doing additional things, but this would not set forth their policy that would be generated by the Department of Education and the school districts. And then there is a federal EpiPen Access Act that has no funded, in other words, you can get free of charge access to EpiPens for education. So this is not meant to define, but part of my intent with this bill was also to record some of the testimony so that in government classes, they can have an example of a student brings forth an idea and then how we debate the specifics and the different issues. And I am more than open to adding a, how should we put, sort of guardrails on requirement for minimal training and et cetera, and use. And, you know, look forward to any work with suggested verbiage additions.
Thank you. Rep. Keeler, do you have a follow-up?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the answer. I would like to work with you just on some clarifying language, because I think there's a lot of assumptions in our state language that assumes that if it's school personnel for students, there's an assumption that that's in school, similar to like our athletic trainers are at school functions. What I fear is that we're forgetting our home visit individuals. And so if we could look at some guardrails and language. Also, I love that you're utilizing youth voices and bringing them here. It would have been great. I know that that individual is probably in school, but to have them as a testifier to join us in this process as well. I love that. That's investing in our future leaders. The last comment I will make is the one thing that I did was I Googled EpiPens for schools, which is actually listed here in this language, and everything I find shows that they're permanently closed. So maybe we need to look at some other options to put in our language that actually provide opportunities to provide our schools with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Keeler. Christensen.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Quam. And I'll just be really quick here, but I want to repeat what Rep. Keeler said, and that thank you for doing this for your young constituent. This is, I think Representative Erdahl probably likes your civics lesson that you're doing with this student. So thank you so much for doing this, and I can see it probably needs a little tweaking, but. I really do believe that we need to be able to offer to students who are in that kind of trouble some life-saving procedures. So thanks much, Rep. Quam.
Thank you, Rep. Christensen. Rep. Quam, any last words?
Just that, I apologize for not having this fleshed out as much, but part of the intent was to show and have the actual voice of the student. My wife was the president of the first responders in my area and went out on medical calls. And so I'm fully aware of additional training and parameters, but I think this is a first step in possibly making school safer. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Rep. Quam. Seeing no further questions, House File 224 is laid over for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill. Our next meeting is Wednesday, January 16. We'll be hearing Rep. Mueller's bill, House File 1083. And there being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned. Thank you.